for the recorder, just to identify who the voices are for the transcriptionist, and that's to say that this is an interview with Robert Naughton by David Brock, taking place in Saratoga, California, on January the 24th, I guess it is today, 2007. And Dr. Naughton, I thought I would begin by just asking you very basic questions about when and where you were born exactly.
Yes, I was born October 13th, 1928, in Stockton, California.
And had your family been in California for some time?
Some time, yes. As far as we can go back on my mother's side, as an Italian family, they came here in the 1790s.
Wow. To Northern California?
Northern California, right. From Chiavari in Italy.
And was your mother's family involved with agriculture?
Agriculture at that time, near Sonora.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And could you tell me a little bit more about what you know about that? Or?
Well, the two brothers arrived there apparently in 1790, and they were felt to be two separate families. One was in the southern part of Sonora, the other was in the northern part. And unfortunately, they intermarried, because that's all the people that were there. And so that the last generation was Uncle Louie and Aunt Dolly, which had been great-great aunts and uncles. They had no other children. And they had two girls, and they did not want to adopt anybody, so that the family had just sort of... There are some distant relatives still up there. We heard from some lady who worked in the bank. She said, oh, no, they come in all the time, Volpone. So, and that's the family name. It's V-O-L-P-O-N, either with an I or E. And that's where the confusion occurred.
Ah.
And I remember that some of the crops that they had, particularly cherries, and my dad and I would go over and pick one cherry and eat two, and that ended up with an upset stomach.
And what about your father's side?
My father's side was Irish, and they came through two areas. One was Ellis Island, and our name is there at Ellis Island. And then they went across the Sioux Indian country to Butte, Montana, in mining. They were in mining. And then my father came to California. And so a common Catholic marriage in California at that time was Irish and Italian.
And what brought your father to Northern California?
He ended up we had a mine, actually, up in the Sierra, a very small mine. And that got us through the Depression. And then he went into more civil engineering with construction work. He was the chief on building the linear accelerator at Stanford. So, and the United Technologies Missile Center down here in below San Jose. So he did a lot of big construction.
Did he have an engineering education?
Yes, he had some. He was at the State School of Mines, Montana State School of Mines, and then he went to Berkeley for a short time.
And was it a metals mine then?
Gold mine, yes.
It was a gold mine.
Gold mine, yes.
And did you, for how long, for how much of your childhood was the mine sort of an active concern?
We went through the fourth grade. There was no kindergarten then, and the school was in Maloney's, California. And I met my teacher, who had educated us through the first four grades. She had settled down here, and the school was closed. And there were 15 children in 8 grades. That was it.
One-room schoolhouse?
Very much one-room.
And so was it a quite rural area then?
Very rural. There was a mine that wasn't really producing much in that area, and that was the only industry that we had. And Dad and my grandfather Doherty, who was my mother's father, used to go over, and I used to go over with them. They had one of those pumper things on the railroad track, and go over, and they would mine the, they would take the ore, and then when they, after they finished crushing it, then they would put it on a concentrator table with mercury, which would dissolve the gold. And then they would take the gold, and why we didn't come down with mercury poisoning, I don't know, but they would fry it in a frying pan to drive off the mercury, and then take that gold into Sonora. And that was our income.
And so, did you have siblings, older siblings who were working?
I was the oldest of five. Okay. Yeah, I have three sisters and a brother.
Right. So was it your grandfather, your father, were they the two people principally working?
Two principal people, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have, so you lived there until... You say through the fourth grade. So that's around age 10 or so?
Right. And then we moved to San Andreas for a year. And it was a huge school. There were 300 kids in 8 grades. So nothing like things. And then we moved down onto the peninsula just before World War II. And we lived in Woodside.
Okay.
For 2 years there. And then we moved to San Carlos. And when we were in San Carlos is when I went to Sequoia.
Okay. So you were in Woodside for sort of middle school or junior high school?
They didn't have middle schools then, and yeah. I was there for the... 6th and 7th grade.
Okay.
And it was a tiny school then. I don't remember the numbers, but it was a very tiny school. It was one room school.
So let me just see here. If you can... So did the Depression really make much of an impact on you and your family?
Well, you see, when you're living at that level, you don't have anything to compare it with. So you don't know whether it's good or bad. It's just that that's what you had. We did have NRA stickers on our window, and we had a radio, but the electricity, there were several companies trying to become what eventually was PG&E, and they were terrible people. They would blow up transformers. They would cut down trees. And so we didn't have a lot of electricity very often. One broadcast I heard was Orson Welles' Wars of the World, and we were all not sure. If you'd heard the beginning, it said that this was
right.
Not true, but that's one of the few. We didn't get much of that. We heard some of the fireside chats. We lived in a wooden structure that was what they called a bunkhouse. Was there a few? There was a store across the street, but bought very little. Grew most of our own stuff, vegetables, fruits, what have you.
What were sort of the emphases in your household growing up? Let's say before the time you moved to the peninsula religion, or what was
well, the first of all, the easiest thing is the religion. There was no church in the town. And the whole time when we were there, we went there when I was about 18 months old, we had, there were no movies. One came to town, I think it was Will Rogers' movies, I remember, and nobody could afford to go, so it was didn't work. But that was the only time in all of those years. And one of our biggest activities was, of course, going to school. We would walk to school and what have you. But there was no dance halls, there were no saloons, none of the usual kinds of things, and there was a limited number of people living there.
Was there a library of any sort?
No, that was something that created an interesting mess for me in the eighth grade. But
What was that mess?
Well, this is when the Stanford Binet test came out, and that's based on literature. And we really didn't have literature either in the school or else. We learned reading, writing, arithmetic kind of thing, basic, that was it. And so that when it first appeared in the late 30s down here, the Sequoia used it to decide what you were going to do in school. And there were three of us who took it at that time and completely failed it. And so that they had a rating that was 2-2, you'd done everything perfectly. 1-2, 2-1, 1-1. The 2-2 was essentially a retarded kind of thing. And I was a 2-2 going into high school. And I mentioned to the counselor that I was going to wanted to be a doctor. And of course she knew that I was going to be flunking out in the first semester. So I never got, in the first year, I never got any pre-college courses with one exception, and that was English.
Hmm.
And the English teacher had the three of us and said, I don't believe that there's something wrong here. I know these kids. So she had me tested along with the other two fellows, on a non-literature basis, and of course, you know, we get enormous IQs out of this, and she took them, and the librarian, who was our counselor, didn't care. She knew it was wrong. Her husband was the teacher in math, the English teacher, and he put us in advanced math classes as freshmen in high school. And then took the results down to her again, and it was crazy. So when we came to getting recommended for college, it didn't occur. And so my dad knew the chancellor up at UC, and he went up there to find out. So then he went back down to the principal of the school and said, what's a 2-2? I had every honor the school gave us, the three of us who were retarded. Graduated 1, 2, 3 in the class out of 700. He looked, he says, oh, Norman, we get those occasionally, but the big problem is that they don't make it beyond the first semester because they just can't do anything. And he says, you're talking about my son. And so then when we got accepted to UC, we had to live in Richmond. And that's when Gordon and I, he wasn't one of the three. And he, we realized that we lived in Richmond, we'd been commuting all day long to and from classes. So we went to San Jose State. But, yeah, I always tell the same story about being a 2-2.
So you did your first 2 years also at San Jose State?
We both went together. In fact, he had a flatbed, I think it was a Model A truck, and we would take off every morning, go down there, and come back every day. So it was great.
And then, just to loop back then in time to just your impressions maybe before high school when you're living in, when you moved down to the peninsula and we're living in Woodside. Mm-hmm. And just your impressions of the area, what Woodside was like, what the surrounding area was like.
We at that time, Woodside was strictly a summer home place for people who lived in San Francisco. And so we rented a house in the Woodside Glens, and we walked from there to school all the time. And it was essentially a very rural area. The famous barn that's there, that's a Tudor thing on Highway 1, was there when I was going there. We'd walk by it every morning going to school. And the school was on the road that went up to La Hacienda. Yeah.
And you mentioned that by the time that you got to high school, you already knew that you were interested in becoming a doctor. Could you talk a little bit about how you knew
actually,
that?
Actually, I knew that when I was 10 years old. My dad was working in when we moved to San Andreas, and he was working in an assayer's office, which was a common thing then for mining, and he took a cardboard box and just threw it up on top of a filing cabinet and got a fractured dislocation of his neck. His head just fell back. And there was a Dr. John Brown, I remember him, young doctor just arrived in town, and this was usually a fatal type of thing. And just marvelous. He just took care of me, recovered completely, no paralysis. And I thought, that's a kind of a neat way to live. And I wanted to become a doctor, and I wanted to go to UC Berkeley. Of course, there was only one UC there.
How did your mind fix on UC Berkeley?
Well, we had lived in Oakland for a very short time when I was right after I was born. And then we lived in Stockton and Oakland and moved up to Sierra to get through the Depression. And so I knew about Berkeley, and I guess maybe it was the major. I didn't even think about Stanford.
And as you were going through school, did you find that study came easy to you, that, you know, you were performing well academically?
Yeah, we, when I say the three of us, we finally got into reasonable classes, and we essentially graduated with straight A's for all high school. And it wasn't hard for us. We got assigned, it was hilarious, we got assigned to a addition and subtraction math course, and they had a book from the Navy, and could we, and this is probably what we're going to be using for several years, and the instructor also was saying, something's wrong here. And so, not understanding that, we finished it that weekend, just finished it and turned it in. They didn't even know what the hell to do with this, and that's how we ended up in geometry and algebra early. But it was never, academics was never a problem for us.
And so you graduated at the top of your
right,
class.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And were you and Gordon Moore in the same class then? The same year in
yes,
school?
Yes, right. We were in the same year. He lived in Redwood City, and his friend, well, I think he may have come over from Pescadero before then, but when he was living in Redwood City, wasn't close to us, and most of our friends were from San Carlos, which is the next small town up. And so then we would meet in different things, but we were not in the same classes together. I think he played football there for some time. I was called a manager in the football team, and that was really a water boy. So when I graduated from Sequoia, I was 5'1 and weighed 110 pounds. I was on the swim team, but I was a tiny guy.
Didn't Gordon Moore also do diving? Did you know one another in that connection?
He was doing the diving when I was doing the backstroke. Yeah.
So how did you? Well, let's see. A couple different questions. How did you first meet Gordon Moore? How did you?
Probably with the swimming would be part of it. Those people I've gotten have seen around here. They have settled around here. But I know that with the... when we started, it was the beginning of World War II in 1942. We were in high school. And so, 1946, all of these guys would be coming back on GI Bill and going to college. And that was their, all of the colleges, universities, priority was to get those guys through school. And so that housing was impossible. And we came together on that. We both found out about having to live in, he was going to go to Berkeley too. We found out that we had to live in Richmond, and it was going to be a long commute both times. And we said, we didn't want to do that. So we went to San Jose.
Did Berkeley have some housing in Richmond?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, they had student housing there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you think back to, in your high school experience together, then you had these common sporting activities. Were the both of you in the same sort of social group or clique?
No, we I thought about that after I first talked with you. We were from two different towns and two different groups. There was about four of us from San Carlos who all went also to San Jose State. But only Gordon and I commuted in this truck. And it was just fun. And we continued to do that at Berkeley.
To commute in his truck?
No, he then got a Model B Ford. And I was so short, I could get up behind the driver because this is when Betty entered the thing. And she, I guess it was an aunt in Berkeley. She was periodically ride with us. And it was a hilarious thing because we got into an accident on Bayshore driving back. And it was like a World War I movie. And the car ahead of us stopped suddenly, and we didn't stop. And the guy was drinking a chocolate milkshake while he was sitting on this freeway. And all of a sudden, it looked like there was blood all over the windshield inside. And we said, oh God, we killed somebody. And his father was the chief deputy sheriff of the county. And here we are being called off, the two of us, with this young lady. I mean, my God, oh, this is horrible. Here we got this white slavery thing going on. And not really. But anyway, we were in the police station for quite some time before anybody confirmed the fact that, yes, that's right, his dad was the chief deputy sheriff. But I'll never forget that windshield inside. Boom. Oh, God, it's hilarious.
So... So how did it, tell me a little bit about what Sequoia High School was like during those years, how big it was.
Again, we had about 750 in our class. It was the primary high school for that whole Carlemont didn't exist, and Woodside didn't exist, so there was a single high school, so everybody from that whole area came there. Rather diverse background. One of the things that did occur was the Japanese students were taken out of our classes and put into this internment thing. And that was an introduction to everything. And then we would have, at graduations during the war, people were wearing their uniforms to graduate, and they would just disappear into the thing. And one of the big hospitals out here was Dibble Hospital, which was up at Stamford area. And it was a big thing. I was very active in the student activities. I was the class vice president, and then I became president when the president left. And I ran the student council, and I participated in sports. Now, I'm not a big sports person, but it was a good time. It was a good time. We had good teachers, very good teachers, when we got the classes that we wanted to do. Once they found out we were serious about going to college, we couldn't take shops because we'd ruin our hands. And very, very diverse cultural group of people from all over the whole area.
Did, socially, did things, did groups form according to where people lived?
Yeah, right. They okay. did. So that's where the four of us from San Carlos pretty well stayed with right. themselves during the whole time.
I see. Well, could you talk a little bit more then about the impact of the Second World War on the school, on the community, on your family?
Well, we had a lot of things that occurred, and the most of the people killed at Pearl Harbor came from the Bay Area. And so a lot of animosity, a lot of bad feelings about the Japanese. And, oh, boy, I'll tell you. And so when it was decided to intern them, people talk now about how illegal that was. I know when we lived there as students, we were so angry at these people that I'm afraid that there may have been a mess if they had stayed. And that's not nice to say, but this is what was going on. And of course we would lose friends, brothers, who were a year so old. And Dick Rossick's brother was killed in Guadalcanal, and that brought everything home to us. But there were just so many people who were killed at Pearl Harbor, the 3,000 or something. And then most of the not books written at that time were at various parts of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we had victory gardens, and somebody being upset about dropping the atomic bomb, and I was in Korea. I was at twice, and I was a Navy corpsman with the Marines, and that you have a lot of different thoughts about war.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, things were very short. Things were very short. I had my first job, besides the paper route thing, was working in Torito's Market in San Carlos. And I got paid 60 cents an hour. And I figured out that was a penny a minute. Boy, I was really living.
That was during high school?
That was during high school. And the manager was lived near us, and he would wrap up butter in plain paper and give it to us because it was rationed. Gasoline was rationed. You had a sticker that said how much you could get. Meat was really in short supply. But so we would grow a lot of stuff. One of the most miserable crops that we grew, though, were squash, zucchini squash, and we grew several heads of zucchini squash. God, I got sick of zucchini squash. But we were out in the backyard when the news reports were coming in from Pearl Harbor. And it really, I know my dad was very angry.
So by the end of your high school experience, you were still on track with your desire to go to
right.
medical school.
Right.
And
right.
And so was it just, how did it come to pass that, was it, did you and Gordon Moore see one another socially? So then you're to discuss this idea of going to San Jose State instead of Berkeley?
I think we just figured out this is what we had to do. And I don't remember the details as to, because I was very close to this group from San Carlos.
Right.
The two brothers and the other fellows, and these people were in my when we got married. And it was a, I think it was a necessity kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We found out that we weren't going to go live in Richmond, and even though we had been accepted at Cal, but we wanted to, so this worked out, he had this truck. And we tried living down there one time. I know I lived there for, I think, a quarter or something. And it just, it was more than I could afford. So we came back to the truck again. That's
and,
good.
And how would you, in those 2 years, I guess, commuting together to San Jose State, did Gordon Moore ever talk at that time about wanting to become a chemist? Did you guys ever talk about chemistry?
We didn't talk much about, at that time, you still had the, what our goals were, and he took primarily math, physics, and chemistry. And a big thing at San Jose State at that time, they had a wonderful math department. And they dove into that very well. And so that we were trying to get, well, I call it basic ed out here now, out of the way. And I thought I had it out of the way, and I finished my associate's degree. And then at the end of my senior year in Berkeley, they reminded me that I needed another social program. So I decided to take math. And the mistake I made was not taking the graduate student lady, date her in order to take the class. And I didn't understand that requirement, so I didn't do well in that class. But mostly it was just getting through the requirements. And it was a very busy campus, as they all were. All the veterans came back. A lot of guys just weren't qualified to go. And they started, and they didn't make it. But books were very expensive. We never bought books before. One of the big things at that time was slide rules. And they were terribly expensive. I'm trying to learn how to run them. But we took a lot of parallel courses. I did take a lot of chemistry courses. He did put together, he loved explosions. He put together some stuff from one of the chemistry class. It came table near it. It was so unstable, it'd go pop, 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 pop. And the instructor was a little upset about that.
Did you guys sometimes commute down on the train? Was there rail service down? Or?
I don't remember doing that, really. I remember taking the train occasionally. I remember the one thing about the train that I never forgot was Harry Truman was president, and he came through San Jose, and I was closer than you are to him. He was standing on the back of this thing, you know, in the car, and I remember I was right in front of the crowd, and I looked up at him, and I thought, oh, wow, and he looked like a president. He really did, and I'll never forget that. That was really something. The only president I've ever seen.
Did you get to know, were you and Gordon more just sort of commuting pals, or did you have a friendship that developed at that time?
Well, we developed a friendship, and then at the end of the 2 years when we decided we were going up to Cal, we decided we were going to live together the same place, and that was a big step too for us both, because we hadn't even thought about it at that point.
How would you describe him, Gordon Moore, during high school and during those San Jose State years? Was he quiet? Was he still the guy?
He has said himself that he really didn't work very hard in high school. But he was a very studious guy. When he got down with the classes he took, he was doing very well in them. And when we got to Berkeley, he took about, again, the same three classes, basically, was math and physics and chemistry. And he was a good student with that. He was a quiet kind of guy, but he would, I think we were at State or Cal, I'm not sure. He belonged to the Rocket Society. So one day he and I set off this rocket, and the thing went completely out of sight. We don't know how high it ever went. And we were at his house. And in came his father. Father was livid. Something about screwing around with the rockets or something. It came down and went through a two-story house, went through the top story, through the bottom story, and exploded in the living room. Nobody got hurt, but he knew that there was only two people who could have done that. So nothing ever came of it, but... And he had this rocket engine that he had designed on his desk at Berkeley. And that was the first Rocket Society. And that, you know, that's back in the 40s.
Did you get to know his family during this time period? Did you meet his... I mean, it sounds like you were over at his house. Did you meet his parents?
Yeah, I knew his parents. His mother was a very quiet lady, very nice lady. His father was too, but he also was very much of a lawful, obviously lawful kind of guy, being chief deputy sheriff. And he, lent me a 45 to go to Korea on my second trip over. And he was just, he also was a quiet kind of a guy, not a bombastic, not a politician type guy. He was very nice.
Was he somewhat imposing? I've got the impression that he was sort of a somewhat imposing figure.
Well, he's a big person.
Yeah.
He's a big person, and in his uniform, yeah, but I knew him from a different way, so he didn't seem imposing to me. There's some hilarious stories. Was in Woodside, he and his deputies would go up there during the deer season to be sure that these guys weren't going to shoot up the whole area, and somebody stopped and asked him where their deers were, and he said, oh, there's a lot up there, but you'll have trouble getting over the fence, and let it go. Shortly after that, here comes this guy with this big doe, I mean big, not doe, but male deer draped over the hood, and said, thanks a lot, but boy did I have trouble getting over the fence. What he had to do was to go up to the headwaters for Crystal Springs Reservoir. It's all reserved, you can't go in there. He climbed over that fence, shot this deer, which was right next to the fence, and brought it back. Well, his father couldn't arrest the guy or anything because he told him where to go.
And did you get to know Gordon Moore's brothers at all?
There's two. One, I took care of his youngest brother's children.
Huh.
One, down here and practice, and then they got divorced and they disappeared. His brother, the other one who lived in Pescadero area, was actually a farmer in agriculture, and very pleasant guy, and I met him maybe one or two times, but that's about all.
Did you get to know Betty Moore at all at San Jose State?
No, I don't know. That's one thing that I thought about when considering all these things. I know when she came into the picture was when we were going to Berkeley, because she would drive up with us. I don't know how they met, but Betty and Gordon have known each other longer than my wife and I. We were married 53 years, so.
What was your, when you met her during those Berkeley years, what was your impression of her?
Well, she was a nice gal. She was a tiny gal. And because my own wife is only 4'11", so a little short. And he was courting her and doing all of this kind of academic work and doing superb academic work. I was always amazed by that. And I'm not sure, she went to the senior ball with him and I had gone with somebody else and we had not dated much at all. And Betty was new in the whole thing. We were not big daters, even in high school.
When you, one other question about, before we get into Berkeley. You mentioned that your father had gone to speak with the chancellor. How did the two of them know one another?
They were classmates.
Oh.
He didn't finish 4 years of college, and he had gone to Montana School, State School of Mines. He was at Gonzaga with Bing Crosby. And they told Crosby he had a lousy voice, he might as well quit what you're doing, you know. But, and then he got to Berkeley, I don't know how long he was there, but this was one of his classmates.
I see. So then it would have been, around 1948 that you guys
started? We went to Berkeley, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you were there until around 1950. Were you quite occupied with the sort of pre-med program then?
Yeah, right. Pre-med program, you could take a degree in chemistry or zoology. All I had to do was take one course either way in my senior year. And pre-med was really competitive then, really wanting to go. This was their last shot.
And so in what way was it competitive, just very
hard
coursework?
Well, the numbers of people applying for the number of places available.
Oh.
And the GI students, this was going to be their last chance to get into medical school.
I see.
Yeah.
And was it at this time that Gordon Moore talked about wanting to become a chemist as a career choice?
He was taking I don't remember him using the term chemist. I just don't. That doesn't mean he didn't, but his whole direction was that way. But he talked, as we got into our senior year, we were talking about where he was going to go, and he was going to go down to Caltech.
And did the two of you live together for both those years?
Both years, yeah. We lived on the north campus, right above the Newman Club, right on the edge of one block from the campus. All of mine was down to LSB, Life Science Building, way down in the front of the campus, and looked like the Pentagon. And his was up on the other end. And so we were going all the time to those things. And we had the craziest landlady in the world, and she wanted to make it clear that we were not to use Lifebuoy soap because she didn't like the color that was left in the showers. It was just too much. I mean, I still remember her. And she ran the place. It was really old. And the mattresses were padded foxholes. The worst kids ever
had. And this was the co-op? Was it a co-op?
No, we ate. No, excuse me.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
But the co-op is how we got through.